1913 is sometimes described as the first year of the 20th century. It was the year Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring debuted, the Army Show in New York introduced America to modern art, and Arnold Schoenberg was forced off the stage at a concert of his atonal music in Vienna. Joining me now for how these cultural watersheds all came about in such a short, intense period of time is Sarah Fischko of WNYC's Fischko Files. She'll be previewing her new hour-long special, Culture Shock 1913, this Thursday evening in the Jerome L. Green space, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show.
Thank you very much, Leonard. Nice to be here.
So 1913 was this amazing year, but the rumblings for this explosion of modernism began in the late 19th century.
Well, sure. That's the thing, is that it sort of came to a head in this year, but that's the fascinating thing about looking at it, is that you look back, you go as far back as the 1880s and forward, and you begin to see how it all builds, and it's remarkable.
I have a friend who has a theory about cusp years. He says everything builds up and builds up and builds up, and then you suddenly have this explosion, and then everything changes from then on. I mean, there's a continuum, but that cusp year is the one that then determines how so much is going to happen later.
Yeah, Tim Page has a theory about the first 10 years of any century are kind of dead, and then suddenly there's an eruption after that. So.
Well, of course, when we talk about 1913 in art, we're talking about two different things when we discuss Europe and the United States,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes, indeed. But one of the things that did happen in 1913 was the meeting of the two, and what a shock it was to America to
now,
discover.
Alfred Stieglitz had already started bringing, a great photographer, had started bringing modernist art to New York before then, but he just had a gallery.
He had a tiny gallery.
And it was the Army Show that really changed everything for Americans?
There were two galleries in New York. One of them was the Stieglitz, and there was one other, and they were both small. And the general atmosphere was really that there weren't a lot of opportunities for people who wanted to show to do very progressive, interesting work. And so it was the frustration of these artists, actually, that made the Armory Show happen. That's what's so interesting to me, is it wasn't a promoter, and it wasn't a kind of commercial interest. It was the artists who said, we can't stand this anymore.
But isn't it interesting that photographers were getting involved in bringing abstract art to America?
Yeah. It is interesting.
Because photography was the alternative, and some of those abstract artists were saying the reason we're doing this kind of work is because photography has kind of co-opted the role of the artist.
That's true, but I think one of the hallmarks of the period is the confluence of all the arts, photography and painting and music and architecture in every field, it seems. They were responding to these similar conditions and thinking in very much the same way.
Many Americans who were interested in the new art had gone to Europe, but the Army Show then opened it up to people who stayed here?
Well, it was hard to get to Europe in those days. It was 10 days on a boat, and it was, you know, quite a thing. So some artists had been to Europe, but not that many, and there was not enough communication between Europe and America for people really to be aware of the extent to which the Europeans were remaking art.
Marcel Duchamp became the star of the Armory Show for his work New Descending the Staircase. That work even shocked the Cubists, didn't it?
It did. It did. It shocked everybody. And in fact, the Parisians rejected that painting from the association of the French association. He submitted it to have it shown, and they said, well, it's not cubist and it's not futurist and we don't like it, and besides we just don't think it's very good.
But the organizers of the Army Show thought that it would still be a good idea to exhibit it because it was irreverent, because it did shock, do you think?
A lot of people think that really what was intriguing about New Descending a Staircase was the title of it, and was the fact that there had been this unspoken contract between viewers and artists that said, well, you tell me that you're going to show me a nude descending a staircase, and I will be able to see that in the painting. This was shocking because you couldn't really see it in the painting. And not only that, but you weren't supposed to paint nudes descending staircases. You were supposed to paint nudes reclining or posing or sitting in a genteel fashion, you know.
And the Witts renamed it Explosion in a Shingle Factory.
Yes, indeed.
So because to some degree he took some of the look of Cubism and made it into something different. But there was something similar going on in Italy at the time, futurism.
Yes, the futurism, absolutely. There were, I think the word, you know, is fragmentation. The images were becoming shattered, as were words and music, everything.
But New Descending the Staircase was painted before 1913. What was Duchamp doing in 1913?
Well, New Descending a Staircase was painted in 1912, and then he got famous in 1913, and that was pretty exciting for him. And then he decided he really didn't want to paint anymore. He just wanted to think things up. So he started to think of these strange things, which he later called ready-mades, like a bicycle wheel, you know, mounted on a wooden stool, which he said he liked to turn in his apartment, so it was like watching a fire in a fireplace.
He also signed a urinal.
Yes, and that was a few years later.
It, but, as his own. There's one person who came up with the argument that for most of the 20th century, people debated over whether Matisse or Picasso was the more important artist, and now it turns out it was Duchamp. He's the one who's had the biggest impact on the century of our time. I mean, the art of our time.
Well, the thinking and the idea of saying it doesn't even matter how well you do it or with how much skill or with how much technique, what's really essential is the statement that you make with it.
Getting back to Tim Page's idea of the first 10 years or so of the century, well, we're in the year 2012. I'm not seeing any kind of explosion of this sort in the offing.
Well, I think that's part of the reason I was so interested in this period, is because there are many similarities between this period and that one in terms of how anxious people are in response to how much change there's been in the last 30 years, just as back then it had been the last 30 years. But the response hasn't quite materialized yet, the artistic response to it. So perhaps it will.
Sarah Fischko is here, the host of WMIC's Fischko Files. She'll be previewing a new hour-long special called Culture Shock 1913 this Thursday evening in the Jerome L. Green space. And throughout Culture Shock 1913, you talk about how people were feeling disoriented and unsure of how things fit together anymore. Was that because of the fast pace of change in the years leading up to 1913?
Yes, it was because of the increase in cities. Suddenly, the change in time. Everything was moving much, much faster. The notion that you could affect things with the flick of a switch rather than with your strength. This was very deeply affecting to men at the time. Women jumped into the breach when they discovered that that was a great effect, and were fighting to get the vote in 1913. So there was a lot happening, an enormous amount.
Cars were replacing horses.
Yes.
Elevators were taking people up into much taller buildings.
Yes, and it was noisier everywhere, you know.
Was there also a feeling that war was in the offing?
Yes, I think things were building in that direction. I don't think people necessarily knew it was coming. But one of the most interesting things that people told me, a number of people who've written about this period and historians who've thought about it a lot, is that when the war did come, it was actually a relief from the level of uncertainty and anxiety that people had felt. And little did they know what would happen in the war. They hadn't been through a world war, but it was actually comforting.
What was the reaction of some of the artists of the earlier century who were still alive, like Monet? He retreated into his garden and wound up painting what now look like revolutionary paintings, but at the time perhaps were almost seen as revisionists?
Yes, at the time they were certainly not seen as contemporary or avant-garde in any way. And there were a number of artists who responded to this level of change by basically disappearing, you know, to Tahiti or wherever they went. So obviously not everybody was on board. It was a huge movement, but there were also people doing something other things.
The two musical pieces we discussed, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and Arnold Schoenberg, what was the piece that he
wrote? There were a number of pieces. There was a piece by Alban Berg, which Schoenberg had arranged, and a piece by Schoenberg, which Alban Berg... It was really a program of music by the Second Viennese School, which was, of course, these three people, Berg and Webern and Schoenberg.
And the concert came to be known as the Skandal Concert?
Yeah, the Skandal Concert of 1913.
The police had to clear the hall because there was a riot in the making.
Yes, they played. Schoenberg was conducting. They played for about a half an hour, and people got more and more anxious, and the crowd actually began to get up on stage, and it was stopped.
Now, Schoenberg is not everybody's taste even today, but I can't imagine people rioting. But that seemed to be the norm. It was Stravinsky's Rite of Spring caused a big scandal. There were a couple of movies that came out where people rioted as well. Was it 1913 the year of the riot?
Well, in a way, it was. It was the year where it just all came to a head. I think one thing to point out about the Schoenberg concert was that it took place in a very venerable theater in the Musikverein concert hall, in what's called the Golden Hall, this very beautiful place with a lot of gold leaf and a lot of tradition attached to it, where Brahms used to be the music director. So it was really, it was much more radical to have it happen there than it would have been in some new contemporary venue.
But it really was radical. He was changing the way people would even think about music. Stravinsky, it comes out of what preceded him.
That's right.
Although it may have seemed shocking at the time. But Schoenberg is coming up with this whole new concept of the tone row and serial music.
That's absolutely right.
He's reinventing music?
Well, he's creating a new language of music. I wouldn't say he's reinventing music, but he certainly is proposing a new language, and the language was quite vehemently rejected at that moment, and by some is still rejected.
Now, what do you think is going on here? Because this is also around the time when totally abstract paintings are starting to be painted. Do you think that artists were trying to find to be new instead of just advancing what had been before?
I don't think artists were trying to find something new. I think artists, and that is why I got so interested in this to begin with, are responding. They're responding to the change. They're not, as someone said to me, they're not sitting around and saying, oh, let's fragment everything. Gertrude Stein wasn't saying, oh, let's divorce words from their meaning. They were responding to this enormous change of the last 30 years.
Although you focus on these three major artistic watersheds, there were a number of huge changes in film and literature, how we thought of time and space with Einstein's theory of relativity, and how we thought about human nature with the work of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung.
Yes.
Was everything up for grabs in this time?
Yes.
So people were feeling threatened.
Yes, people were feeling very threatened. Everything they knew was being undermined and undercut by this new thinking, including ideas about religion and man. Darwin, don't forget, had recently presented a totally revolutionary idea. So everything was challenged.
Of course, this is nothing new. You point out that when the Eiffel Tower was built in 1889 for the Universal Exhibition, many people were outraged. I think back to Impressionism, which Impressionism was meant to be a nasty name applied to this new painting. Now it's one of the most loved of art styles ever. The Eiffel Tower is the icon of Paris.
True.
So did 1913 bring those sorts of things as well?
I think the remarkable thing about 1913 and the years just before it and even just after it is that it became a global thing. I mean, you can always find pockets where there was shock, this shocked somebody and that shocked somebody, but this was a global phenomenon. Everywhere, the Russian futurists, the Italian futurists, the French, and in New York, there they were emulating the Europeans once they had seen the European art. So it really became huge.
And in the case of the Rite of Spring, we not only had this extraordinary piece of music, which confounded some people, now it just sounds like hey, that's what music sounds like. But you had Nijinsky dancing to it and doing a revolutionary ballet.
Yes, very strange-looking stuff and kind of profile and with flat feet and bent knees and breaking every rule of ballet.
The interesting thing is that no matter how shocked people were by this art music, they came in droves. A 500,000 people went to the Armory Show?
Yeah. Well, eventually. In New York, I think it was something like 100,000, but then gradually in various other places where it traveled, it was seen by other people.
Do you think people were aware of it at the time, that something, that a cultural shift was going on?
I think some of them were, but I think the people who were aware of it were the artists. I think the artists were ahead.
Now, as I said earlier, you'll be giving a sneak preview of Culture Shock 1913 this Thursday at the Green Space. Who'll be joining you?
I have the wonderful MoMA curator, Ann Temkin, she's in the program, and she's also coming on that night. Frederick Morton will be there, who wrote a fascinating book about the period. And also Stuart Isikoff will play a couple of modernist compositions at the piano. And then we'll all look at some images and hear some sounds and talk about it.
Do you think in 100 years from now we'll be talking about some kind of a digital revolution? Because people right now are ambivalent about what digitalization is bringing.
I'm for sure that's one of the things we'll be talking about.
Unfortunately, we won't be able to be doing that talking, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah Fisco, for coming here. And we have links to more information about the program and for tickets on our show page at WNYC.org.